Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice.
Hello and welcome to Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Today's guest is Sari Botten, a writer, editor, and the founder of Oldster, a Substack publication that's reshaping how we think about aging across every stage of life. Sari has spent years exploring the emotional and cultural sides of getting older, publishing deeply personal essays that challenge the idea that aging is something that only happens later in life. Her work brings honesty, nuance, and a much-needed sense of humanity to the conversation. Sari, welcome to Roundtable Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I've been looking forward to this conversation for some time. So your Substack, Oldster, explores what it really means to age across every stage of life, not just what we traditionally think of as old age. You've said on there that everyone is an Oldster. What does that mean?
Well, I've been focusing on what you're supposed to do at what junctures in life since I was 10 years old. And I've thought a lot throughout my life at different junctures, you know, am I in step with people? Is this when I should be doing this or that? Why am I not up to this yet? So I come at this from a lifetime of wondering about what it means to get older. I also have experienced the grief that comes when you move on to another phase of life and you leave behind another. And that happens throughout our lives. You know, you leave behind the grade schooler to become a middle schooler. You leave that behind for high school, college, marriage, jobs. It's all, you know, very emotionally fraught. And also you encounter certain expectations at certain ages throughout life that are worth exploring as far as I'm concerned, as a person who's been thinking about this since long before I was 60, as I am now. So it's interesting to me when I hear about people in their 30s wrestling with, am I going to have kids? How much time do I have to decide that? Am I on track in my career? Have I found the relationship I want to spend the rest of my life with, or do I even believe in that? I just think that these are questions that come up throughout our lives. And also we deal with aspects of physical and emotional aging all the time, especially as women, because our fertility is limited. And also when you cross over to 36, 37, your body starts changing in very dramatic ways relative to your reproductive cycle. So, you know, this is something that isn't just an old person thing.
Good point. Good point. So why do we tend to treat aging like it starts later instead of something that's happening to all of us right now? I know you mentioned you've been thinking about every stage that you leave behind as you go through your life. Why do you think normally we don't do that?
Well, I think we live in an ageist, youth-obsessed culture driven by capitalism. There's money to be made by making things a problem. And so, you know, marketers know that the older people are, the more they're dealing with and the more things they can sell to them. Creams and, you know, all kinds of potions and so I think that marketing has driven the focus on aging being, you know, only older people, because it creates something, a problem to solve. And it's also happening more dramatically, you know, later in life. That's definitely, you know, as we get older, we face more challenges related to, you know, our bodies being subject to the ravages of time and gravity. So, you know, it is legitimate to say that, you know, the people who are dealing with this the most are those who are much older. But that doesn't mean that we don't deal with certain aspects of it throughout our lives.
Sure. You know, just as you were talking earlier about, you know, even moving from, you know, kindergarten to first grade, or, you know, elementary to middle school, junior high, wherever you are in the country, I'd never really thought about that, but you're right. You are leaving behind something that you're never going to go back to. And there's something kind of profound about that. And, you know, just thinking about the journey of life.
Yeah, that happened to me when I was 10 and my uncle came to my bowling birthday party. And he said to me, "Well, you'll never be one digit again." And it was really catastrophic for me. Like, I hadn't thought about it being any kind of milestone. It was just my birthday party and my birthday. And it was the first time I realized that we're going in one direction. There's no going back, and you're going to leave some things behind. And I also was always a little bit out of step with my peers. I was always doing things before or later. And so I had this anxiety that I have to this day. I still have this anxiety that has sort of morphed into just curiosity about what other people's experience is of getting older. Sure. And that's driven Oldster.
You know, and that's interesting because, you know, as you say that, I remember an aunt during my 10th birthday, you know, talking about what a milestone it was to be double digits, and not quite put exactly the same way, but very similarly to what you experienced. And I remember pausing and thinking, wow, I hadn't thought about that. And then, of course, then it's a teenage, and then it's, you know, it goes on from there. But that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the other, I guess, part of that is, I know I experienced this, and I've seen articles about it where we all think we're 10, 15, 20 years younger than we are, but at some point, and I'm you know, about the same age you are, at some point the body catches up, and or at least the body maybe gets ahead of where you think you are, and how, you know, in your mind and how you feel. So I guess there is that point of reckoning at some point in everybody's lives.
So. There is, but I also think that when we're not looking at ourselves in a mirror and not looking at a photo of ourselves, we have these ideas of who we are that are based on past versions of ourselves. And depending on the context, where I am, you know, if I'm in my hometown and seeing people I grew up with, or if I'm around family, I have this vision in my mind that I'm much younger than I am. And I'm associating myself with an earlier version. And then you go and you look in the mirror and you're like, oh, right. You know, but that happens a lot. I think that a lot of people experience that. It's also a phenomenon that has been studied. And Jennifer Senior wrote an article about it for The Atlantic, for which she interviewed me. It's about, you know, the incongruence between your chronological age and your internal age, or multiple internal ages.
Interesting. I'll have to look up that article. Has it been published?
Oh yeah, it was published in 2023.
Okay. I'll be sure to grab it, but thank you. So we were talking about, you know, people kind of recognizing the aging process at every age. Has the reframing landed with younger audiences, have you found? And how does the thinking this way change the conversation for younger people?
I get more and more pitches from younger people. People in their 30s, 40s are pitching me a lot. And what I've learned is, you know, so early on, the elders in the Oldster community would go nuts on me if I would feature somebody, even somebody like 67. And I had to sort of lay down some ground rules, and I emailed everybody. I was like, listen, this is not AARP. This is not just a study of old people. And at the time I was like 56. So I said, you know, they would write to me, I like it better when you write about people in their 70s and 80s. Yeah, well, I'm 56 and I'm interested in what's going on with me. So initially I really had to sort of train them to realize that this is a study. This is an exploration of aging throughout life. with a more of a focus on older people, but still I'm interested in everyone's experience. But what I've learned is that it's better if I'm focusing on younger people, I don't give them the oldster questionnaire anymore. Instead, I have them write about their experiences with elders in their lives. It's a more organic way to include them in the conversation. I've had to adjust how I do that.
Interesting. Good. So do you think that the perspective actually reduces people's fear of aging?
Yes. There's an intergenerational conversation that is happening on Oldster by way of the posts and also in comments, where I think elders are enlightening those who are younger about the realities, the positive realities of getting older. And I know that it has had an effect on me. In my late 50s, I was writing a lot about being anxious about turning 60. And, I didn't really feel like that number matched who I am and where I'm headed. I've lived an unconventional life. I don't have children, so I'm not going to be a grandparent. My husband and I, we operate our house like it's an arts camp. I don't have a regular job. I don't have a lot saved for retirement. A lot of my peers that I grew up with are retired or retiring. And so this number 60 just didn't feel like it matched who I am and where I am. And I was very anxious about that. And also like just about entering the third, kind of like the third and last phase of my life. And then all these elders commented, my life took off at 60, 65, 70, 75.
Love that.
They found new partners. They found the right career path after they retired from what they've been doing all their lives. They stopped caring about what other people think about them and they took risks. And there were just all these positive reports coming at me. I mean, yes, there were the realities of, our bodies decline as we get older. People have arthritis. People need hip replacements. People get dementia. But they also were having these wonderful experiences now that they were older, now that they had moved on to a new phase of life. And it really comforted me. And I think that's happening for a lot of the younger subscribers too.
That's wonderful. So let's take a step back. Tell me about your journey, if you would. How did you arrive at Oldster, the Substack, process and that platform. Some folks may or may not be, or not everybody may be familiar with Substack, but talk a little about what led you to this moment where it's really a breakthrough. And as we were talking about before, you've got a lot of momentum. I first heard about you from an article in the New York Times. I know you were recently on an NPR piece, and I'm sure, lots of other folks have expressed interest in having a conversation with you, but talk a little about how you arrived at this point and why do you think there's such momentum?
Well, first of all, I am established as a writer and editor. I've had a long career as a freelance writer, as a staff writer, staff reporter. I edited two very popular anthologies, Goodbye to All That Writers on Loving and Leaving New York and Never Can Say Goodbye Writers on Their Unshakable Love for New York. They've been bestsellers for over a decade. I also was an editor at Longreads for 5 years. And while I was at Longreads, I started a series there called Fine Lines that was the precursor to Oldster.
Okay.
I left Longreads in 2020 and I knew I wasn't done with the subject, but Longreads owned the name and I knew I needed to think of another one and I stumbled. I could not think of another name. And then I had a dream one night that I started a magazine called Oldster. And I woke up in the morning and I made a joke about it on Twitter. And then I realized it was actually a good idea. So I got on Substack. So I had already had one Substack called Adventures in Journalism, which is like my personal blog. It's very small. So I had already had the experience of being on Substack and I knew how easy to use their CMS's content management system. It's very easy to use. They also have, they combine that with the best of crowdfunding and social media virality. They really have a winning formula for success and for making money at this. So I started Oldster and it took right off. And again, I already had people who knew who I was, who were excited to see me starting something new. At the time I was still on Twitter, which used to be a wonderful, you know, way of broadcasting what you're doing. I had like 11,000 subscribers, followers, great. You know, so when I went out on Twitter and said, "Hey, look, I started this," immediately people just got on Substack, subscribed, and it just took right off. And I think people were just eager for a different kind of conversation about aging, something that wasn't either toxically positive or, you know, just a huge bummer, and also not limited to a particular audience. Most aging related media is for women over a certain age, women over 40, women over 50, Gen X women, boomer women. I wanted to open it up to everybody because, you know, if you want people to understand what's happening to old people, other than just old people, you have to bring young people into the conversation and vice versa. If you want young people to have other people, you know, older people understand what their struggles are, you've got to include older people in the conversation. And the same with men and women. So that's what I did. And
that's great.
It just was a huge hit from the beginning.
That's wonderful. And I love that you have, you know, really turned that curiosity into something pretty powerful. You mentioned toxic positivity. That's an interesting kind of juxtaposition of two words. But I know exactly, I can picture what you mean. And I certainly know that I've, you know, come across some sites that are really all about that. So interesting.
Yeah.
So what are some of the emotional realities of aging that don't get talked about enough from your perspective?
Well, there's that grief of letting go of past versions of yourself. I also have some friends who have kids who talk about the grief of watching your kids grow older. While, of course, you want them to grow older and live long, you know, you're saying goodbye every year to a version of them that will never exist again. There's also loneliness a lot. I think that as we get older, it takes more effort to make friends, maintain friendships, find partners. You know, it's just, you don't have as many opportunities as you do when you're young and in school and going from high school to college to a new job. You know, it's just, you have to put more effort in to finding and maintaining relationships. So it can get very lonely, especially if you are struggling in any way physically. You know, if it's hard to get you out of your house because you're in pain or you're injured or, you know, you have some other chronic ailment, illness, it can be really hard to put yourself out there to not know who you're going to encounter at the party or at the restaurant, you know. So loneliness is a big one. I think also maybe regret. You know, people reach a certain point in their lives and they think about the things that they didn't have a chance to do. And that they might not get a chance to do. And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of like just realizing how much you have to narrow down your bucket list when you have fewer years ahead of you and many more years behind you.
Sure. So what would you say to somebody who is feeling those kinds of regrets or you know, feeling that I never got to go do that thing and I don't know that I can now? Do you have any specific advice you would give them?
I mean, I think to talk to other people about it, but you know, isolation is a problem and adds to that. But I also think like, okay, so think about what you can do. What can you do? Like now, you know, seize the day, seize however many days you have left. And nobody knows how many days they have left, which is, you know, part of what makes it tricky, you know, and part of why we wind up with those regrets. You know, we're going through our lives one day at a time without really thinking like, oh, wait, can I make room for this big thing that I always wanted to do? I'm just trying to get through my life. You know, I'm just trying to make sure I can pay the bills and stay healthy. So But if you, you know, if you come to a point where you're like, oh God, I missed all these opportunities. Well, what can you do? What can you be intentional about? It's one of the questions on the questionnaire, you know, are there any milestones that you might have missed that you might try to, you know, reach later in life? It's one of the questions.
Sure. No, that's great advice. You know, so a lot of us are used to seeing really curated versions of aging, and it can create this pressure, you know, to do aging well, whatever that means really. But why is it important to show the messy parts of getting older, not just the highlights, but also some of the lowlights?
Well, I mean, I think whenever we can really exhibit humanity in its truest form, it's good. It allows other people to know that they're not alone in their humanity, in their messiness. You know, it's never good when things are presented as like, oh, everything's great, and why aren't you doing as well? It helps to know that other people are struggling in the same way that you are, and imperfect in the way that you are, because that's reality, no matter how old you are.
Great point. So what surprised you most about your own experience of getting older?
I like myself better than I ever have, because I've become more myself. I've stopped trying to be who I think people want me to be. I've gotten too tired to try and, you know, contort myself. And also I've realized it doesn't work. And I got tired of not getting what I want by being who I am. So I've invested in being authentic in a way I hadn't been in my 30s and 40s, 20s, you know. And so I enjoy being me. I also I'm more comfortable with everything about me. Every choice really resonates, because I'm coming from a more grounded place in, you know, who I am.
Sure. That's terrific. And so important, I think, I love the word grounded, and just recognizing that that every stage has meaning, and it only gets better in some regard. But so this is a question that every Roundtable Talk guest gets. What are you looking forward to as you age?
I mean, I guess I'm looking forward to seeing what's ahead and what I can do that I used to think I couldn't do. You know, at this age, I'm taking more risks and they're landing. I'm really like just shooting my shot and it's paying off. And so I can only imagine that as I get older and more confident and more skilled, I will shoot some even bigger shots, and I have some really big goals. And I think that as I get older and more knowledgeable, and more confident, as I said, then I will keep winning. And that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to eventually slowing down so that I have time to focus on some things I've put off. Like, I've wanted to re-delve into music. I play piano, violin, guitar, ukulele. I sing, I write songs. I wish that, you know, I started studying music theory years ago and didn't get to continue because life was too hectic. I also want to study visual art. I've taken some drawing classes. I'd like to take more. I'd like to do more art. So I imagine there will come a time when I will be able to slow down a little bit and just learn things that I'm curious about.
I love that word, curious. And, you know, it, I guess, fits right in with the storied career that you've had, right, in writing. So, I mean, it's a different kind of creativity and a different kind of exploration of art and the arts. That's amazing. So I'm curious, from your writing career, you'd built up a following, a fan base, and you were able to translate it into Oldster. Did you have a vision for where it was going? Or was it just something that you thought, I'm interested in trying this and exploring this to feed my own curiosity and my own, you know, kind of soul, and then it turned into this? I mean, I'm just curious how it matched perhaps where you thought it could go.
I had no idea that it was going to turn into my job. I thought it was going to be like Adventures in Journalism, my personal blog that doesn't have a lot of followers. I thought this will be a fun thing to do while I look for a job. You know, I really had no idea that it was going to become what it has become. I'm happy it has. And I think that because I have approached it the way I've approached all of my work in a very professional manner, you know, even though it was just fun, I approached it professionally, doing the kind of writing and editing and curating that I've always done professionally. So I think that made it viable in a way that, you know, just a plain old blog might not be. And also, as I said, Substack has this winning formula that allows things that are good to rise and succeed and make money.
Hey, that's wonderful. And it's so important, in the creative fields that there are opportunities to, make a living at it, right? Because so often I think creativity can be devalued or not valued at all.
Yeah, it is true. Who knows what makes one wonderful creative thing take off and another wonderful creative thing just kind of stay undiscovered. There are so many factors, but somehow this got seen and
that's great.
Picked up. Yeah.
So you describe yourself as a late bloomer, even after all of the success that you've had. What does that mean to you?
You know, there are ways in which I was ahead of my peers growing up, but more ways in which I was behind them. I felt like in terms of social maturity, emotional maturity, I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. Like my peers were smoking cigarettes in junior high and high school. I was late to drugs. I developed late. And then when it came time to like really become an adult, I didn't know how to do that. I still feel like I don't know how to do that. I don't feel like an adult in many ways. Because I don't have some of the trappings of adulthood. Sure. And I got married the first time very young at 23, and I got divorced. I separated at 26. And then I found myself in my mid to late 20s having no idea how to go about most adult things. You know, I just felt like I was living this protracted adolescence. And in a way, I still feel like I am. However, I also think that this describes Gen X. I think that a lot of people in my generation don't really know how to be adults, don't feel adult. And I think it comes from this weird experience we had where we had our parents, we had these parents who were one way, and then the sexual revolution happened and they turned into adolescents themselves, and they put us in adult roles too young. And it was very confusing to us. I mean, you know, I was really being a little adult in my house from the time I was 11, and I didn't like it. And, you know, I was making dinner and, you know, making sure my sister did her homework, and that felt weird. And then it made me resistant to adulthood. But it's not just me. It's my entire generation. We are so confused about what it means to be a grown-up. And I think a lot of us are still struggling with it. It's not just me. Anytime I write about this, so many other Gen Xers chime in and say, that's me too.
Wow.
We were latchkey kids who are still latchkey kids. I feel like a latchkey kid in my own house.
Interesting. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, that becomes so, embedded in who we are, right? And how we approach the world. But you talk a lot about nonlinear paths when it comes to aging. For a lot of people, there's an underlying pressure to stay on some kind of aging timeline. why do we still feel so much pressure to hit certain milestones by a certain age?
Well, I think a lot of those milestones are outdated. You know, we're living longer now, which means that there's more time to get to certain things. However, you know, there's this like, we're pack animals, you know. What's everybody else doing about turning 40? What's everybody else doing about turning 50? What, you know, I mean, that's, we're all looking around to see what's everybody else doing? What's supposed to happen now? You know, we look for these guidelines and they get very entrenched and, you know, and then we look up and we're like, I don't feel like everybody else who's my age and I'm not doing what they're doing. And actually now there's more wiggle room because we're living longer. I mean, not everybody lives longer. I mean, people get terminal illnesses young, and but as a culture, as a species, we're living longer. And that means that we do have more time to get to some of those things. Now, some of the other things we really don't have more time for, you know, and this goes back to women and fertility. I mean, there are all kinds of new advances, but there's only so far you can really go with them. I just taught a writing workshop last week in Vermont, and one of my participants had had a baby at 54. Now, that is really an outlier, and it was a wonderful story, but that's an outlier. You know, fertility, natural fertility, sort of, you know, if you're lucky, you can go to 40 with, you know, help from the fertility, you know, industrial complex, you can maybe go to 44. But, you know, and then, but then, you know, you're going to live much longer. So maybe it is good to put off. But then also all kinds of birth defects become a risk. I mean, in any case, we're living longer. That gives us more time to reach certain goals.
Sure. Makes sense. So what would you say to someone who feels like they're behind in life?
I would say what I say to myself, which is, you do you, you know, like, it's okay. It's okay not to be on track with everyone. You know, you're doing all right. Like, I have to like stop every now and then and say, you know what? You don't even want what those other people want have. Like, I've also given myself a hard time about not wanting what people have. But I've stopped doing that. And I've realized this is who I am. And who I am is on her own track. And it's okay.
Interesting. That's a great point. So do you think people getting older, or do you think getting older actually gives people more freedom to reinvent themselves?
Yes.
The aging process?
Definitely. I see people reinventing themselves all the time. People are always writing to me and telling me about the things they tried and loved and started doing later in life because they lived longer, they retired, they, you know, they got to try something new that they never knew they were even interested in. I mean, I just think it creates all this possibility. There is so much possibility in getting older. And that is, you know, one of the best things I've discovered. That's one of the best messages. There is so much more possibility when you're older.
That's great. And, you know, you alluded to ageism earlier in the conversation. And where do you see that? How do you think we can combat ageism as a society? What are some of the underlying, causes or barriers to actually embrace aging?
Well, I think it comes from ignorance. I think it comes from people not really knowing what people older than them are like and how capable they can be. And that's part of why I am making Oldster an intergenerational conversation, because I want to destigmatize aging and demonstrate that it's happening for everyone throughout life. So if we can get people being empathetic toward one another through their shared stories, through their shared experiences, maybe we can open people's minds to the capabilities of people who are older. You know, if we don't know, if we don't hear from people, then we don't know that, you know, people older than 60 are actually still quite, you know, functional.
Sure.
You know, I hear people talk about, you know, young, I hear young people talk about people in their late 50s and 60s as if they're like, you know, ancient, and that is not the case. So it's about, becoming aware. And so I am trying to make people aware. That is a big mission for me.
That's great. And so what is next for you, for Oldster? Where do you see, you know, your path forward?
Well, I am about to start working on an Oldster anthology along the lines of my New York City anthologies. We're finalizing the deal, but that's the next thing to come in 2027. I'm going to keep doing live events. I'm doing a Gen X karaoke, a piano karaoke night at Sid Gold's Request Room on June 10th. And I'm doing Oldster's 5th birthday party, August 7th at Joe's Pub. And I want to make a podcast after the book comes out, like a real professional podcast on a major platform. And then from there, I want to make a TV show, Oldsters of America, where I would travel around and interview people who are doing interesting things given where they are in life.
That's really cool. I will look forward to the anthology and then everything that follows that. It's great to have those kinds of goals. And clearly, you know, I think you've proven and exhibited that you achieve your goals.
Thank you. Great. Yes. Great. I've learned that wherever I follow my curiosity, I succeed.
That's wonderful. That's a great way to sum up the conversation. So, but we have one last question. What have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
That there isn't just one right path. That if you really listen to yourself and really be your true self, you will find your right path. And it might not match up with other people who were born the same year as you, but it will take you where you belong.
Interesting. That's great. wise words. Well, thank you again, Sari Botten, for sharing your wisdom and your insights and your journey with us. We'll be sure to share a link to Oldster on Substack, you know, as well as your other platforms. But thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Derek Dunham, and I'd like to thank Dave Schaffner, our producer, and Matt Campbell, our engineer. We'll see you next time on Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Schaffner, our producer. We'll see you next time on Varsity's Roundtable Talk.